thought I had the switch on. See? Delusion. The attitude towards trust. A wholesome attitude that leads to freedom. But before that, I'd like just to answer a question that came up this morning from a person that I saw one-to-one, which is, what is the way, the best way to listen to a Dharma talk like this one in relationship to hearing maybe in a way that is different? And I think it was a very valuable question. So I said to this person, I'll speak to this question in front of the whole group this afternoon. And so here we are. Hearing the Dharma is not only a support, but many times the Buddha speaks of hearing the Dharma, meaning the teaching. And actually, in the sutras, in his own teachings, quite a number of people would wake up, have an insight in the very moment of hearing the teaching. So it can happen any time. That's the first thing, which is important to hear. And how to listen to the teaching really requires an embodied presence, including receptivity at the level of the body, but also at the level of the heart, a presence that we've been exploring together, a quality of not needing to do anything, but rather to have the sense doors open and include the words that you're hearing in the field of presence. So I would incline the attitude of receptivity more than an attitude which immediately is grasping at the words and wants to make sense of them. That's very helpful, because what we express is often manifesting at the level of direct experience. So we can simply know that we are here physically, present, open, and just let the words be received. In this way, listening is different than hearing, right? Because there's a focus. You are listening. You're not just spontaneously open. There's kind of an intent, yet with a very clear sense of field of presence, which is open and spacious. So this is what I had to say in relationship to this question that came up this morning. When coming on a retreat as this one, we often have probably quite a number of expectations, of hopes. I'm sure you're not here without any hope of changing a situation, whether your own, right? In relationship to fear of something, or expectation that you will find peace. And yet the quality, appropriate quality, which will lead to a trust, is coming from a place of allowing. And there is a truth in this very teaching, in this very situation, which really is linked to a certain quality of uncertainty. There is an unknown. When there's expectation, we are placing the expectation to find what we are expecting, right? So we're in the field of the known. Yet here we're asked to take a leap of trust, you can say a leap of faith, to be willing to be present to what may emerge, not knowingly. And a part, kind of the adventure or the journey, is to take that leap of faith or leap of trust, to allow for the experience, whatever it may be, to arise and that it may be received, be known. And that's not easy on a first day. A first day, there's many hopes, many expectations, and of course, we have some idea, right, about what a retreat would look like. And when we are on this very first day, the actual experience may probably not match your idea of what the retreat should look like or what your practice should look like on a first day. Isn't it true? So there's a sense of frustration, maybe some fear, maybe some sense of hopelessness, some sense of, okay, this is how it is. And you just, you know, are kind of letting it drop. And all of these ways are totally natural. Because we come from a trance of an idea, really, a very clear sense of a dream state. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be like meeting someone else than who I am in daily life. And suddenly, we're not different. We have the same emotions. We have probably the same thought patterns that run through the mind. And here we are, not only do we have the space to run away from them, but we're very intimate. And so we're face to face with who we actually are. And this is not the very meeting that we were expecting. And it's fascinating that I express these words because I'm sure you can sense what this means. And so we begin to realize that we're dropping the level of the trance, the ideal, the perfect me, to come into contact with the direct experience, what is happening. To drop at the level of reality. So actually, it's not about escaping, but it really is about encountering ourselves. As Charles said, it's the meeting with ourselves. And it's in the meeting with ourselves that we will find the beauty. The beauty of who we actually are, the beauty of life. Because this human being that we are is just nature. It's one of the manifestations in nature, among other manifestations of nature, of the natural world, of which we are part. And so when we begin to commit to the practice, and it's important that we have this structure, so that we don't constantly escape, but we give ourselves a deeper sense of opportunity to give birth to this being, to really allow the birth, the manifestation of this very being. And sustaining this quality of careful attention as best we can enables this encounter, no matter what is happening. And that is so exceptional. No matter what is happening, we learn and we grow. This also means that we move from a place of having plenty of layers of ideas, of judgments, of thoughts about ourselves, and they're there, and actually in the silence, we often are much more aware of what I think about myself. What's my idea about myself in relationship to myself, coming from the thinking mind, and really emphasizing that who I take myself to be is maybe not the truth of who I am. The constructs, the ideas. All the storytelling. And Charles talked about this last night, right? So we notice how so often when we stay at this very clear superficial level, I'm such and such person. This is who I am. And of course, I take one or two references, and therefore I narrow the possibility in relationship to the nature of my being. It's very limiting. And in the teachings terms, you can say conditioning. We then are conditioned to live only by the ideas that we have about ourselves, preventing ourselves to meet the whole, the entire being that we are. So it implies that we notice these thought patterns and we don't stay at that level. We really allow ourselves to deepen the understanding of who this being is, truly is. And it, of course, it implies also a wonderful possibility, a potential to understand the world, others. Because the more we understand ourselves, the more we understand and have a capacity to be willing to listen to other beings' way, the nature of another being, the nature of who they really are, not through the filters, the layers, the constructs that we have about them, the judgments that we have about them. That's one level. But at a deeper level, what happens? So this is an attitude that really emphasizes the potential to deepen the contact, the connection through awareness, leading to trust. And this is what the attempt of the Buddhist teaching is about. Walking the path implies walking on new land. A new territory. For many of us, it is new territory. And it can be quite adventurous at times. Anytime we don't know a territory, the journey requires a leap of faith. There's a need for some sense of curiosity, of interest, to walk on this new territory. And it's helpful to have that curiosity and freshness, to hold ourselves with the aspiration, I don't know myself deeply. I know some parts about myself, but maybe something new can come along. And definitely from that place of aspiration, we will meet something which is not already known, that we haven't seen over and over and over again. So it is an invitation. My very first encounter with the practice was also, for some reason, like many of you, a week retreat. And I think it really already emphasizes quite a leap of faith, of trust, to have the courage to come on retreat for a first time a whole week. Not everybody has that courage. So I was on my very first encounter with the path, and it was a week retreat, during which I cried quite a lot. I had my handkerchiefs. And there was some emotional pain there. And I had no idea that that was lingering, that it was kind of present. And somehow there was also, next to this feeling of pain, a feeling that something in me was healing. Not even linked with the story. It was just like, ooh, a release of some kind of pain that was there. And no doubt that it wasn't something that I was denying or pretending that it was not happening. But before the retreat, I just didn't have kind of the intimacy, you could say, to allow for that very experience, the nature of this being, to have a source of fountain coming up, and just a release, an understanding, very deep understanding. So this is just one condition. Naturally, among many conditions, someone can experience what I just described. Some other being will experience maybe a lot of sleepiness. And that's exactly what will happen. And there is a sense of, oh, there's a release. If I'm a very stressed person in my life, the nature of this being really needs rest. And so, oh, finally the body says, this person has stopped. Stopped from running. And, oh, it feels good. So let me take a rest. In this rest, there can be a real sense of restoration, refreshness, a sense of peace that doesn't come from fixing the situation, but just allowing for the body to rest. To rest into being. So if we can allow for whatever expectation, whatever you think should be happening on this retreat, on the side, and journey, walk the path with some freshness and curiosity to allow just what comes up, then something can turn the situation in relationship to bringing a sense of trust, meaning this is exactly what is supposed to happen. Nothing else. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, on the first day, a lot of what we meet often is not something we like very much, right? There's no doubt that we may have the idea that we're not accomplishing much in relationship to normal life, where we probably do accomplish a lot, and yet something deep down happens, and it's a big insight when we actually turn our attention inwardly, rather than constantly look at the outside for answers, right? Even if we don't like a lot of it, we stop the distraction, we stop the escape. We stop to run away, and something new can happen. And actually, on a retreat, we literally stop from running away. Because here we are, you know? And there will be plenty of moments where there's disconnection, but we stop running and we begin to notice that there are moments when we want experience to be different than what it is. Or we notice that we are trying to avoid the so-called, what we call, the bad experiences, right? And we begin to sense this in a very true way. And this is a very big discovery, in fact. What's the insight here? And it's probably the same for everybody. We begin to have an insight, And an insight is really a very big understanding. That insight is we can't choose our experiences. No matter how much we try, we can't choose our experiences. Actually, deep down, we're not really in control. Therefore, there's a sense that what is being revealed when it is seen, good and bad, are not up to me. They're not up to me. And actually, good and bad don't have any meaning in relationship to the nature of an experience, to the nature of what is. So, there is no good experience, there is no bad experience. And you can translate that into there are experiences that we like and some that we don't like. So that's very different from good and bad. When there's good and bad in the mind, there's judgment. And the judgment is painful. So we translate that into liking and disliking. Much more balanced. And it's a great teaching to feel this, not only at the level of the intellectual, but at the level of the heart and mind. This is where we begin to sense a feeling of rebalancing act, where it's nourishing. The practice is nourishing. Everything we go through is exactly here because of certain previous conditions. It's not by chance. Certain previous conditions were there, and what happens in the present moment, based on these previous conditions, something flourishes. Present moment conditions, we meet them a certain way, will give, of course, a follow-up of causes and conditions. This all happens on a momentary basis. Momentary meaning in the present moment. So the practice is not about getting good experiences and pushing away the bad ones. And of course, we'll see that happen because it's our tendency, right? We live in the world in this way. How much do we do to get only good, comfortable, pleasurable? How much do we do to escape, run away from unpleasant? This is a cause for suffering. And this is exactly what the Buddha talked about. So it takes a lot of trust to not take that ordinary road that we know well. We are learning a skill. It's a practice. It's a training. This is why we're here. It may mean not only being with the body sensations, of course we start here, but as we will be here, we'll give, of course, many, many different ways that we can relate to experience from the place of allowing, caring, and letting be. With that letting be, there's a natural unfolding which lets go. So at times it may mean skillfully just being with the body sensations, body presence. At times it may mean that we need to call and nourish the care, the kindness. We've spoken about this, right? A caring, kind attention. So at times it may mean opening to hearing, finding some greater spaciousness in relationship to presence. And that kindness may just be in the sense of a field of presence, looking at the trees outside and just connecting, or the flowers in a garden, and finding some support, to allow to stay in being mode rather than not, right? Just for a moment, then feeling the earth underneath our feet and really allowing to feel, wow, walking is quite exceptional. One step, taking fully that very step, and be there for it. Really be present. There's a nourishment. There's a sense of a completeness that comes about. It's replenishing. So there's a way that we can actually, in the simplicity, nourish the care and the kindness. And I was very touched, actually, I'll tell you a story. There's a meditator. Here we call them yogis. A meditator whom I've known for many years and who has quite some years of practice. And she had a car accident a year ago. And you can just imagine she had so many different breaks, her body all in pieces. Luckily, she had wounds, but she was well treated. But it took months and months and months of physical re-education for her to be able to place one foot on the earth again. So, of course, she stayed in bed with, you know, crutches, and she could not move. And she said, you know what? In the most simple language, she said, I can't wait for the moment I'm going to be able to put that foot down on the earth and walk again. And she said, I think I'll understand the walking meditation like never before. And, you know, it's true. It's amazing. But it takes a leap of faith that we don't need to be in a kind of an accident to know the preciousness to be able to taste a step on earth and really taste it. The flavor of rice at lunch and really taste it. Be present for that moment. So what does it require? It requires that we let go of the thought, I need something else. Somewhere else is better. And I'm sure you've all had the thought, oh, it's horrible to be here. I don't want to be home. I want to be somewhere else. I want to escape. We go out of here. What actually are we when our mind is screaming? It's screaming out of this very being. If we escape, it's ourself that we escape. We're not going to find someone else. Of course, we can do the running again. But the value of just allowing ourselves to really sense the beauty of just the simplicity of allowing, of meeting ourselves. So we need a source of inspiration. And when I visited this yogi friend, she was a source of inspiration for me. Because even sitting here, there are many times I just forget this beauty of the present moment and just allow to sense, wow, it's happening here. It can't happen in another place. It's imagination. So she was a very great source of inspiration. So at times the trees can be a source of inspiration. The flowers, the sunset. Another yogi, another meditator, very steady in their practice. They're just doing the walking. How many times have I had the support of another yogi, another person, just do the practice and just do it in a way there's flexibility. It's not rigid, but they're steady. Walking, sitting, and you say, wow, you know, if this person can do it, it's inspiring. I can do it too. And the next moment, it's possible that you're the inspiration for another person. because this is exactly what's happening. We're in this together. There's an interconnectedness. Nature outside, nature inside, and human beings just are all part of nature. And so there's a way that we connect with each other. So this source of inspiration gives the motivation to not see things as good and bad, right and wrong, so much separation. If I find something good, then of course the other thing is bad. And there's so much fragmentation in the right and wrong. Of course, this happens in the sense of the field of sensory experience. But how much is it happening also? And we definitely begin to see this also in our own minds, because we begin to really see, oh, the thoughts that are coming up, you know, the ideas, the views, right? This is right. This is wrong. Creates a lot of split. And that separation in the Buddha's teachings is equivalent to dissatisfaction, to stress, or unease. Constantly for or against, right and wrong, push and pull. It's a syndrome that every single human being will encounter. And we will meet these tendencies, but they don't need to run the show. When they're seen for what they are, they're just seen for what they are. So the quality of willingness is born out of two qualities. One is interest, curiosity, in what is happening in the present moment. It's always what is actually here, not what can I get that's not here. And that's where there is also an imbalance, because of course when we do something, it's to get something else. That's the normal way of behaving, right? I'm not going to do something here just for the sake of living the moment fully. When we are in the world, I do an action to get another result, right? And we begin to see, wow, the place of being actually is revealing the result, the outcome. It's the very same place. So you can understand that intellectually, and it's already huge if you understand it. But we need to experience it, you know, that the very place where we look is the place of the trust and the place of liberation. It's not another place. It cannot be another place. The very place where there is the holding, the grasping, the dissatisfaction, is the very place where there will be the freedom. And of course, this requires practice to understand it at the level of the living experience, to live this. Not to just think about it, it's not enough. For it to be a liberation process, we need to live it. And this is the way that we are practicing. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Upandita, he was a great teacher, and he's still alive, from Burma, very old nowadays, and he was a very demanding teacher, you know. It was the kind of teacher that you had to have courage to be his student. But also, on the other side, it was so great because he had an uncompromising trust that each and every human being putting themselves in that place of practice could realize the path. He says, not only the Buddha, every one of you can do it. And he gave that trust. He really gave that possibility. He embodied the quality, and because he was a kind of person that he was giving really a sense of possibility, potential to realize the path. Understanding that any one moment that we bring some direct connection and we trust, we allow, we let be, there's an insight. There's a moment of freedom. So it's not at the end of our life, at the end of 20 years or 30 years of practice. It's in this retreat, in this very moment. That's so fantastic. And actually, so many teachers will say, it's not about knowing and journeying into the habit patterns. It's about the beginner's mind. The Zen teacher, maybe you have heard of this book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki Roshi, right? He says, in the mind of the beginner, everything is possible. In the mind of the expert, nothing is possible, because an expert thinks he knows everything. So we're really here encouraging this freshness, this curiosity, this quality of not knowing. And as Leela said last night, ehi pasiko, that's what the Buddha encourages us. It's an invitation. It's not a commandment. Come and see, come and explore. Don't believe. It's not a path to believe. It's a path to experiment. Try out the experience, but give yourself to it for the week that you're here. After, you'll be able to sense, okay, is this helpful? Is this not? But if we evaluate every single sitting and evaluate on the fact that we've been having body pain or we've had a lot of emotional pain, and we'll say, of course, it's not working for me. Look at this. I'm in more pain than when I came. It's not the reference point. It's not the reference point. The reference point is in how I meet what is, not the usual way. So please, the invitation is to be gentle, but also to have a courage to commit to just practice over the days in a very simple way. Not that you should not have any expectation, but in the best way possible, letting all the ideas about what it should look like on the side, and trust the very meeting and what is manifesting within. So no doubt, there will be moments, and this is outlined in the Buddha's teachings. It said that there are difficult mind states. The Buddha talked about them and called them the torments of the mind. Okay? So there's no doubt that they will arise if they haven't arisen already. What are they? Five of them. Very well known to an experienced practitioner. They're laid out in the teaching. The aim is freedom. So there's no doubt that we free the mind from these difficult mind states if we are willing to be with them and relate to them from the place of presence. The first is sense desire, or the wanting mind. The second is aversion, the not wanting mind, said very simply. The third is sleepiness. The fourth is the opposite of sleepiness, restlessness, agitation. And the fifth is doubt. So they're named. And I think it's very good to name them today, so that you know. Have you had doubt today? Probably. You know, doubt in the sense that how can being just with body sensations, feeling the body, bring me any peace? That's a thought of doubt, for example. So there's strong habitual tendencies, or you can say at times energies, habit energies. that each human being will experience at times. And if we're going to go and learn from them, then we are to meet them. We can't learn from something we don't meet. Impossible, right? So sometimes they rise. Nothing is permanent. They arise and they pass. They arise and they pass, right? What is this first one? Wanting. Well, wanting what's not here. Very clearly. Maybe in the very moment where you are sleepy, there's wanting some alertness. Or if you're agitating, wanting calm. That happens at the level of the mind. Wanting maybe the bell to ring after 10 minutes of sitting. Oh, gosh. Notice the desire, wanting, craving. I can't stand it anymore. Wanting to ring. Shift. So notice that the grasping here, it has nothing to do with the aspiration. So there are different types of desires. There's an aspiration, it's wholesome, it's not imbalanced. When there is this sense of wanting, 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 you feel the stress. You really feel the discomfort of that wanting. Wanting for change, right? So you meet the wanting. Wanting another experience than the one that is present. And you realize that rather than looking for that thing to change, you are beginning to be present to the wanting itself. Because this is what is happening in our own mind. There's wanting. What does wanting feel like? And explore that. And of course, we'll be speaking a little bit more about that. The reverse side is the not wanting. Usually we want pleasant and we don't want the unpleasant, right? So not wanting maybe a difficult or just unpleasant physical sensation. Very difficult when we are with some body pain, right? So not wanting, it's normal. There's resistance. So both of these push and pull, that's what we call push and pull syndrome, right? Wanting, not wanting, is called reactivity. And it's stressful to have reactivity. And a lot of our life is based in this reactivity. Constantly. Feeding the reactivity, trying to push away the unpleasant, trying to get the pleasant. This is where we live our lives, many of us. Ordinary ways. And we'll explore this. Right? We'll explore the actual fact of wanting and not wanting. How does it manifest? What does it feel like? Not to get a result or to run away from them, but just to actually meet the experience. Again and again, the freedom is not escape. The freedom comes from through. It's through the experience, leading one to face, to be with the experience, that we find the place of relationship, which is not bound, not entangled. So we'll slowly learn how to work with them rather than react to them. That's a fantastic skill. That's not only actually beneficial for the retreat, but of course for our life. Live with less reactivity. Can you imagine? More openness, more willingness to be able to allow. It really means more spaciousness in ourself. And it happens. Again and again, what's so amazing, wherever we go teach, the human being is just the same. It has nothing to do with culture or with our history or our life story. Because it's at the basis, at the ground of human nature. And so we begin to really meet and allow for the nature of this being to reveal itself. And sometimes it will reveal wanting. And we relate to wanting without reacting to the wanting, but just allowing. We allow. It's okay to know that wanting is present, but yet we don't react to it. So it's in the relationship that the freedom is available. Can you imagine how different this is? It's empowering. We're not so conditioned by the conditions. And therefore, contentment, happiness, much more spaciousness, lightness of heart, a feeling of lightness, really, less heaviness. Oh, the weight of the world and my life and how dreadful and, oh, it's just so weighty, you know, and all this pressure. We actually have a way where life situation is what it is, but we have a possibility to refer, to relate to it from another place. Trust grows from really deeply understanding this, meeting ourselves. Peace grows. Absence of judgment begins to grow. We're less in this field of constantly judging everything that's wrong in me, and of course, everything that's wrong in the world. So there's a whole different new relationship that builds up. It's quite magnificent. Now, it's gradual. This path is gradual. And that's what's also beautiful about it, that it's organic. We cannot push the rhythm. The more you will want to push or pull, right? Speed up the process. And of course, in a world where everything is instant, it's not instant meditation and it's not instant results. It really is organic. A natural movement where one moment will be going with the flow and allow for the process to be what it is. And suddenly, we don't know how, suddenly we're in this huge wave of reactivity. Ooh! How, what happened? We don't even know how it happened, but suddenly, ooh, there's a stiffening. It's normal. So there's waves. Ups and downs. And it's not like linear. You know, today it's like that. Tomorrow. But there are waves. There will be waves. We learn how to surf with the waves. And there's a steadiness of the mindfulness. And there's a wonderful way that the trust in awareness itself begins to be a building block. A building block. A real great sense of a ground for us where we allow life to be a little more just the way that it is. Seeing clearly, vipassana, seeing clearly the cause of pain and how we can be in a place where we relate to the release of that pain. The pain built from the reactivity. So aspiration increases. Commitment increases. And we begin to sense life in a very different way. We fuel awareness rather than fuel the judging mind. So this is a whole process. Therefore, we cultivate really the good ingredients, care, kindness, attention, awareness, receptivity, this being mode rather than the doing mode. And in itself, there's a transformation happening. It's bound to be, whoever you are. This is from Jack Kornfield. The wisdom of the heart can be found in any circumstance, on any planet, round or square. It arises not through knowledge or images of perfection, or by judgment, or the critical mind, but by seeing with the eyes of wisdom and the heart of loving attention, by touching with kindness all that exists in our world. So we offer ourselves this gift, the gift of attention, wise attention, the gift of care, the gift of kindness and wisdom. A nourishment just manifests by itself. We can't make the wisdom. Wisdom happens. We let conditions be a little bit more what they are, and they're okay. Now there's one secret, and I'm going to share my secret with you. We don't need to struggle. Actually, the secret is the absence of struggle leads directly to freedom. I'll repeat that. It's a secret, and it's also the treasure. We don't need to struggle. The absence of struggle leads directly to freedom. Allow. Let the practice, the awareness, reveal itself in a very organic way. There's nature unfolding. Nature is nature. And if you look at a garden, some roses will be about to blossom. Others are very small. Each one of these flowers will bloom, will blossom in their own time, according to causes and condition. Our own heart will open in relationship to causes and condition. It will close, it will open. It will close, it will open. In the closing and in the opening is the trust. And it's so important to understand that it's not only about opening. It's also about closing, respecting the fact that at times it's closed. And it's okay. I care. May I have compassion for this heart, mind that may be closed at time. So we respect the resistances. No need to struggle against, to fight. So it's a soft touch. It's a soft awareness. This is the secret. And what it means in relationship to a more kind of concrete understanding is that we're not attached to a specific outcome. It comes back to trust rather than expectation. Not be attached to a specific outcome, which is, of course, wanting. I want this. I want to get that, right? And if I want to get that, then I'm going to have a very close fist. There's attachment. Let it flourish from that place of non-attachment. Whatever it is okay. We learn to be fully okay with what is happening, and mostly we learn to be fully okay with who we are. It's not about being another being. It's not about being a perfect being. It doesn't exist. What does it mean? really allowing and respecting who you actually are. It's plenty. Fall in love with who you are. So I'm going to close with a few lines from Saint Francis de Sales. He was a great saint. Be patient with everyone, but above all with yourself. I mean, do not be disheartened by your imperfections, but always rise up with fresh courage. I'm glad you can make a fresh beginning every day. There's no better means of attainment to the spiritual life than by continually aspiring again and again and begin again and again. How are we to be patient in dealing with our neighbor's faults if we are impatient in dealing with our own? He who is fretted by his own failings will not correct them. All beneficial outcomes come from a calm and peaceful mind. So this is the beautiful work that we are attempting to explore, not to achieve, to explore. It's all an exploration, a journey. May you all have the trust to journey and to walk your own path that will lead to your inner being in calm and peace, really being in peace with yourself. Thank you for listening.